This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is the Vic Police Glow Show, exclusive to Joy Podcast, presented by Vic Police LGBTI liaison officers and a range of Joy presenters. Now, here is the Glow Show.
Hello and welcome to this Glow Show on Joy 94.9. I'm Ruby, our presenter on The Informer, our news and current affairs show, and also Joy's bisexuality show, Triple Bypass. And we have our co-host, LGBTI liaison, Gabby Tayak, and a regular on the show, LGBTI portfolio manager, Jen Dixon. Our guest today is the Associate Professor, Ruth McNair, from the Department of General Practice at the University of Melbourne. Hi, everybody.
Thanks for having us. How are you?
Great, thanks. So we're talking today about the release of the GALFA LGBTIQ Homelessness Research Project, the final report which has been put out. So I suppose from the get-go, Dr. Ruth, can you tell us about this report that was launched?
Yeah.
So last Wednesday, I think it was.
It was. So we had a launch which was really to showcase what we've been doing the last 18 months or so. I mean, the purpose of this research was really to unpack what is going on in the LGBTI community around homelessness. We understood from services that lots more people are LGBTI than you would expect from just standard population. But we didn't really understand why that was happening. So we tried to look at both some research that's happened before and also interview services and interview some LGBT people. We actually did try to find some intersex people but didn't manage that yet, so we're still looking. So we've reported on LGBTQ people who've experienced homelessness. And in short, it's been a pretty difficult journey, I think, for a lot of people. You know, that there's a lot of homelessness. There's also a lot of instability in housing. So lots of LGBTQ communities are couch surfing, you know, finding housing that's not working for them, that feels really unsafe in some way. So that was something we sort of knew was happening, but we got repeated messages about that. We tried to ask people, well, what's happening? You know, what led to that in the first place? And a big issue was around family violence or just families completely misunderstanding what is diverse sexual orientation, what is gender diversity, not taking it seriously. And, you know, this was a big thing that people talk to us. You know, it's not just like your family's not understanding your taste in jeans or your hairstyle.
Yeah.
You know, this is about a personal, really in-depth identity issue that families just weren't getting. And so a lot of people said they had to leave home because they didn't feel safe there, they didn't feel understood, they were constantly misgendered or told to just get off the fence if they were bi. You know, it was just all these myths and stereotypes, but families just weren't understanding it.
And just to clarify, because I know that often when we hear the word homeless, we instantly think of sleeping on the streets, but that's only a very small percentage of homelessness, is that right?
Right. And look, most of the people we interviewed hadn't been sleeping on the streets. You know, they'd been living in their car. They'd lived in very unstable shared housing with homophobic housemates, had to move around couches from friends, you know, multiple times. So these people don't appear in the homelessness stats. We don't see them, but they're out there.
It's very interesting, and it's quite a big issue when police get involved, because we're looking at family violence in this circumstance. We're looking at issues, if we're looking at the City of Melbourne, homelessness and issues around homelessness in the city have been in the media for quite a while. And that also involves how police interact and intervene and how we can refer homeless people onto services that can assist them. So it's certainly something that in Victoria Police that we're very conscious of. And these results and the information provided in your research will be very interesting and will assist us in probably help us move forward in how we deal with homelessness.
Hopefully. And, you know, this is a bigger picture than just families of origin too, because some people talked about leaving a relationship that was violent but not having anywhere to go. Some people talked about violence or threats of violence in their public housing or social housing situations, you know, just feeling constantly under threat or actually having been abused by other residents. So, you know, this is all about not feeling safe somewhere. And I think if police and other community services had a better understanding of how this works, you know, what are the triggers for someone to become homeless in our community? You know, all the other triggers are there too, but we've got this additional burden of discrimination and trauma experiences.
And I guess one of the things that came out of the research was addressing people looking for rental accommodation. Mm-hmm. And if you're in the LGBTQ community in this circumstance, there were barriers and there were boundaries and things that were preventing people getting housing. So people may have the means to get housing, but aren't getting the ability or the opportunity to get this housing.
And, you know, one example, a homelessness service provider told us they had a client who was trans and had presented to a private rental agency as trans male and as their affirmed gender, and were told there was no housing available, went back as female in their birth gender, and they got housing. So this is the same person presenting in different ways and clear evidence of discrimination. It might even be, you know, under the radar for that rental agency. They might not even realise they're doing it, but the unconscious bias that's out there is just mammoth, you know.
Was there a particular age demographic that was particularly affected? I suppose I would imagine younger people who are more dependent on family would be the ones who would be at the most risk if there is family violence or rejection of gender and sexual identity.
Yeah, and I think young people, you know, under 25 is a particularly vulnerable group in our community. But we were trying to focus broadly, more broadly than that, young people, because we interviewed quite a few people in their 50s, 60s who'd experienced homelessness repeatedly through their lives for lots of different reasons. So it's not just young people, unfortunately.
So it's this particular research is of interest to us in terms of, I guess, trying to understand some of those gaps that we know exist in terms of parent-child family violence and some of the causes. We know that homelessness, you know, often that's caused by relationship breakdowns between parents and children, you know, largely because they've come out or they've disclosed their orientation or their gender identity
or
to their family.
Outed as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So we know that that happens anecdotally, but unfortunately, you know, the policing is very similar to a lot of other areas that are trying to understand that more and more, but there is a bit of a data gap there, a bit of a knowledge gap that we need to get a bit more clarity on. So that would be, you know, obviously this research will be particularly interesting to us in terms of what that might look like. And yeah, there is the older demographic as well, which we have even less understanding about. So it will definitely assist with some of the things we're doing in terms of a policing context.
And I suppose, will there be challenges as far as training that goes for intervening on domestic violence? Is there programs with the police, particularly on LGBTI domestic and family violence?
So it's an area that we're looking at the moment. We've got a we've actually got a couple of things that are going on. We've got a family violence command, which is it is actually still quite new, but it's being ramped up significantly over the last year or so. And that's, they have a focus on a number of issues, but an LGBTI focus is emerging throughout. So we do need to understand a little bit more about it. We've got some products that we've put together, which is around the differences in LGBTI family violence. So we know that many things are the same, but there are subtle differences between how an LGBTI person might be treated in intimate partner violence. So it could be anything from, you know, threatening to out that person, withholding medication. There are some differences when it comes to how family violence is perpetrated within those relationships. So it's really getting an understanding of what that may be, and then, you know, working up and developing the right kinds of tools to assist members with being able to identify that. And that could be anything from making members feel comfortable to actually have conversations with people. Sometimes, you know, not everybody wants to, they don't want to feel like they're prying into somebody's personal life. And so there is that sort of that delicate conversation that is a bit of an educational thing for us. We need to make sure that, you know, our members feel supported when they're having those conversations, but also that they're identifying, you know, when something's not quite right. I mean, on face value, sometimes people, you know, might be assessed as flatmates or housemates, but they might actually be, you know, a couple that's involved in an intimate partner violence situation. So it's really providing an extra layer of education and training. And I guess it's you know, police are no different to the rest of the community. We're still sort of catching up with some of the aspects of intimate partner violence in LGBTI. And really, you know, getting that evidence space together is will be useful for us. But we also have a Centre for Family Violence, which is out at the Academy, which is newly formed. And I've been having conversations with the manager out there around the LGBTI aspects to family violence, and they're very interested in working that up as well. So there's a lot of movement in that space, I guess, from all areas of VicPol, but also out in the community. There's some fantastic work that's being done.
Well, Victoria has pledged quite a lot of money to fighting domestic violence, so I think it is really important and really encouraging to hear that the particulars of LGBTI family violence, which can be very different, I think, from how people just picture domestic violence. One of the things that's come out of your report, Dr. Ruth, was that a lot of LGBTIQ people don't feel comfortable accessing boarding homes and shelters.
Yep.
Now, was any of that to do with the fact that a lot of these shelters are run by religious charities, or was that just generally an issue with not knowing the people inside?
Yeah, I think mostly it's about being scared of other clients or people, housemates, if you call them that, that they just don't know what to predict. You know, that they're expecting some homophobic or transphobic violence. That's very common in those situations. I mean, there's no privacy in rooming houses. You know, bathrooms are open. There's no locks on doors. So it's a really vulnerable place to live.
And then if they're victims of homophobia or transphobia, when they're complaining, the people aren't taking it serious because they don't understand the impact and the mental health impact in relation to being called names, being pushed around on a daily basis.
Yeah.
I mean, we had one vignette that we put in the report, just a gender diverse person who was in a rooming house, was really scared of being outed, so was trying to keep to themselves very much. And then another resident thought they were gay, and they decided, well, it was better to be thought to be gay than trans or gender diverse. And then this other resident actually found out they were trans and started threatening them, you know, trying to coerce them into getting drugs into the place. So, you know, there was this huge layer of hidden but pretty violent transphobic abuse.
Blackmail, basically, so threatening to out.
It was.
Now, previously you had mentioned that bisexual people in particular, I'm just bringing that up because it is Bisexual Awareness Month, and bisexual women in particular are more likely to face sexual assault than both lesbian and straight women.
Yep.
So was that an issue that was raised about bisexual women in shelters where there are both male and female people?
Yep. So there was a lot of people, not just by women, but by men as well, who were very scared about being targeted in services. I think services also are really aware that they never find out if someone's bisexual, and many of them were saying, well, it's irrelevant. But the bi people we interviewed said, well, it's not irrelevant at all. It actually creates this extra layer of risk for them. So, you know, one of the things we were trying to encourage for services was to know how to ask questions in a safe and comfortable way, but make them relevant as well. So, you know, if we are to uncover that someone's bi, is there a reason for that? Yeah, there is, because you want to be sure that they're going to be housed in a safe place.
Yeah.
There's also a reason for linking people with the right community services and peer support. So, you know, there's a lot of reasons to understand this and unpack it more in services. And I think this is one of the key points around trying to get the word out, you know, to services around, is it relevant? Yes. How do you start asking questions sensitively? Then what do you do next? How do you build a list of resources that are accessible?
Mm-hmm. One thing I found interesting in the report was that LGBTQ young people were homeless at a younger age than those that weren't part of that community.
Yep, and that was particularly the bi young people. So it was really interesting, and we really can't explain this properly yet, but the bi people in the Journeys Home study, which is quite a big longitudinal study looking at homelessness, were more likely to have left home early. They were also more likely to have had childhood sexual abuse experiences, more likely to have experienced foster care or out-of-home care. So, you know, all of these risks were sort of compounding for the bi people in the study to say that they were at much higher risk of homelessness for a number of reasons. Now, why were they targeted as, you know, childhood sexual abuse victims? Don't know. You know, how does this play out? I mean, we've seen it in other research as well, as you said.
There's a lot of suggestion around, particularly bisexual people, they're not being, so it's called like the double discrimination, where there's discrimination experienced within the LGBTI community and by the straight community, and also the sense of bisexuality being linked to promiscuity and overt oversexuality, which as a non-practicing bisexual, I always find really bizarre.
It's problematic. And
well, that's it's a really interesting finding, because generally, bisexual specific areas are not really looked at in these studies.
Yeah, and I mean, at least that part of the study was, we were able to tease out those differences between LG and the B. Another interesting thing, you know, in looking at research where there isn't a gender identity question, and this occurred for the Journeys Home and the General Social Survey, so any trans people in that study had to put themselves in a box, and I think a lot of the trans people would have put themselves in the bi box. And this is not just a theory, but, you know, in the most recent trans survey that came out from WA a couple of weeks ago, they did ask all the trans and gender diverse people in that study how their sexual orientation was identified, and a large proportion were bi or pansexual. So.
Yeah, so attracted to more than one gender.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think more trans people would be in the bi spectrum. And therefore, you know, having this sort of complicated level of risk.
Compounding level of risk,
yeah,
it sounds like.
Because it's not only their gender identity, but also their sexuality, which is more marginalised, if you like.
I find that very interesting and quite disheartening. But So what I suppose, so we've talked about, you know, as far as improving training services for particularly police who are intervening, as far as understanding and having training around specific LGBTI-related family violence, what are some other steps that you think we could do to improve services that are available for homeless LGBTI people?
Yeah, well, you know, this was one big thing that came from talking to the service providers. They didn't know where to find information. They were starting to become sensitised to the idea that they need to know more, but where do you look? And so we're trying to look at, or one of our next projects will be developing some guidelines for the sector. And, I mean, it's interesting talking to Gabby and Jen, just thinking, well, how do we layer that with guidelines for police? Because we were thinking specifically homelessness services to start with, but it definitely needs to be broader.
Mm. So I think it was mentioned that there were quite a few LGBTI participants who did mention that they felt there was a space that needed to be filled in specific LGBTI sheltering.
Yep. So, you know, that was a specific question we raised with participants. Do they think there needs to be LGBT-specific services? And some were very adamant that there did need to be. And others said, no, I just want to go to anywhere and know that it's going to be inclusive. So we can see there's a different level of need in this community. Some people really do need very specific support services, partly because they may have had really difficult experiences in the past elsewhere. They don't trust any other mainstream service anymore, which to some extent is not founded, because many of the services now are trying to do a great job.
Mm.
But so for those people, they'll either access an LGBT-specific service or nothing. And at the moment, we have so few LGBT-specific services.
Mm. It probably also, you know, ties in with the LGBTI liaison officers. I mean, it sounds like it's very similar. You know, in some cases where people have had a negative experience with police in the past, they have a preference to go to a LGBTI liaison officer or a GLO. Mm. And that's because they know that those people are, you know, sensitive to the LGBTI community, and they're going to be able to provide them that extra layer of comfort and support. And I'd imagine it's probably the same with that cohort as well. If people that require or believe that, you know, there should be services that are more LGBTI inclusive, they've probably had that negative experience before. And, you know, it would be great to think that everywhere is inclusive, but when you've come up against it, you kind of get to a point where you decide, no, actually, I think I might like somebody that's LGBTI to be there.
I want to make absolutely sure, because if I'm wrong, if I think these things are okay and it's wrong, the consequences can be really serious.
Absolutely.
Also, I think it was interesting that one of the comments, also maybe one of the participants in the survey that was quoted, saying that, you know, they think it's really unlikely that the people they're talking to would actually understand things like non-binary gender or even bisexuality, when even lesbian can still raise questions with people. So the amount of time that these people have to spend trying to educate in a way that is as non-threatening as possible, in case it risks their chances, and there are a whole lot of, I can imagine, compounding anxieties that could create.
And for policing, I mean, certainly police are really acutely aware of not re-victimising somebody. So they're very, very keen to make sure that when they're talking to people, that they're using the right language, that they're not putting somebody, you know, in harm's way by things that they say. And I guess that's our job, to make sure that we provide them with those right support. Because you're right, like, even in community, I mean, it's very easy to misgender, and people make mistakes all the time, and that's natural. But it's just, you know, giving that extra layer of, like, okay, if this happens, this is what you can do. And then people feel a lot more comfortable with it, and the community will respond to that.
Absolutely.
Well,
and to make sure, if you make a mistake, own it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Own up to it, apologise, and say, and then go get onto the right track straight away.
And people really appreciate that.
Yeah.
Because I think, it was clear that a lot of people realise that services haven't been specifically trained. So they realise that there's a bit of a job to do, even as a client, to help educate. But on the other hand, they resent that. You know, they're a vulnerable client.
Mm.
Why
yeah.
should they be educating the provider?
Exactly.
This is a big issue that does come up in the bisexual community a lot, of having to spend, like, a full session, often with a therapist that you're paying for, explaining what it is. So
it's
what it is to be agender, or what it is to be gender fluid, or what it is to be attracted to more than one gender. So I suppose this report's available at www.lgbtihomeless.com.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite extensive, about 70 pages, I think. But definitely worth a look over, just as far as it's a very in-depth, I think it's really in-depth, and there's a lot of interesting insight more than just the numbers, because I think we've known the numbers for a while. We've known that queer young people are on the streets more than non-queer young people.
Yeah, and now we have the report and we've got the information. I guess, where do we go to from here?
Yeah.
Yeah, so apart from developing guidelines, the other big project we're looking at just commencing is a pilot for a safe housing network in Victoria. So this came from participants who said it would be really helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some models overseas. So it's really to say, let's gather together a group of LGBTIQ people who are at risk of homelessness, provide them with some case support, caseworker support and peer support, and help them to find appropriate safe housing through the various networks. I mean, there's, you know, Facebook groups that are helping to try and find people who are, you know, housemates together, for example. And then, you know, over a year or so, once people are housed, get the caseworkers on to helping them with their mental health, you know, appropriate referral to counselling, substance use if they have any, finding the right job, getting into education. So whatever the person individually need to get themselves on their feet. Because, you know, we know if people have some stable housing to start with that feels safe, then they can have capacity to look outside of that and sort out other issues.
So kind of self-empowerment as well as housing as well.
Yeah. So that's, you know, the starting point, rather than saying you've got to sort out all your stuff first and then we'll give you a house.
Yeah.
You know, it just doesn't work that way. But also enabling people to connect in with the right community, whether that be LGBTI or allies, in whichever area they're housed, because that's another really challenging issue. You know, people might be housed in an outer suburban area they've never been to. They're really scared about attitudes in that area or a rural area.
Mm.
But, you know, there is like-minded others out there if there's support enough to find them.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for your time, Ruth. Is there anything else that you'd like to add?
Yeah, I'm just wondering, because that's fantastic, and I think people, once they do have housing and appropriate housing, then they do need the other assistance. How are we going to identify the people that you're going to assist in this project?
Yep. Mm.
So, you know, there'll be people, I mean, we've talked, Gabby, about, you know, maybe the GLOWs referring people to us if they're aware that a person is not stably housed. Other services we're going to encourage through all the networks we've developed already to refer people to us if they're in a homelessness service but need more support. People will self-refer and we'll go through all the Facebook groups and so on as well. So there'll be lots of avenues to get in touch with this project.
Well, I suppose similar to how you managed to get so many participants for the project itself, so you've established some of those connections already.
Yeah, exactly.
Excellent. Do you guys have any more questions?
Oh, look, just to say that, you know, it's a really exciting pilot. We're looking to get involved wherever we can and offer the support of the LGBTI liaison officers. I mean, the GLOWs are perfectly placed to be able to assist the people in those situations. So it's a great opportunity for us to get involved in, you know, I guess increasing our knowledge as well as providing that community support. But, I'd imagine that a lot of people in these situations would need that extra layer of involvement from police from time to time. Mm. So building that, you know, that community engagement piece and just partnering up, we're very excited about it. So it's something that we're looking forward to being involved in.
So I guess if you're listening and know someone who might need some of this assistance, or you yourself would, get in contact with your GLOW and go onto the Victoria Police website, type in gay, lesbian, any of the keywords, or GLLO, and you can find a list of where the GLOWs are all around the state, and you can contact us and we can have a discussion. I don't think it's available immediately, Ruth, but we can certainly start talking about how we can identify you and how we may be able to assist you in perhaps the next 6 months.
So it's
not going to start immediately,
but
we certainly can start these conversations, and we'll be working with our family violence teams to help identify people that would be suitable.
Do you have any referrals people could use now if they're finding themselves in difficult situations?
They can go through our website and get information of how to access support.
Mm-hmm. So that's LGBTI Homeless?
Yeah, homeless.com. Yep. And then we can put them onto the right people. I mean, we're working closely with Drummond Street Services, for example, and also Shepparton Uniting Care. So both those areas already have good support networks. We can refer people in.
Fantastic. You've been listening to the Vic Police GLOW Show. I've been Ruby. I've been joined by Jen and Gabby. And again, Dr. Ruth, thank you guys so much for coming.
Thanks, Ruby.
Thank you.
You've been listening to The Vic Police GLOW Show, exclusive to Joy Podcast, presented by Vic Police LGBTI liaison officers and a range of Joy presenters. Head to joy.org.au/The GLOW Show to find more episodes, or search Joy 94.9 GLOW Show on iTunes. Subscribe so you never miss an episode. Rate and review if you like what you hear.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.